Come and enjoy a straightforward, humorous, and enlightened hour on quantum physics to metaphysics on the show that wants you to ask questions. It's time for Ask Patty, live with your host, Patty Conklin.
Well, hello, folks. This is Vanessa Hall, the co-host of Vanessa Hall MD, as Patty likes to joke. But Patty is taking the week off this week, so I will be hosting the show. And fortunately, I have our guest, Caroline Miller, with us today. If you all will recall back to 2 weeks ago, Caroline was our guest on the show about eating disorders and more specifically bulimia. And tonight, Caroline is going to talk about another topic that she's passionate about, and that would be positive thinking and goal setting, and will tell us more about how she is utilizing these things for her personal coaching business. So, Caroline, why don't you do a much better job and give folks a bit of an overview of your background in this area and what you're doing to transform people's lives.
Absolutely. Thank you. I will publicize myself. And it's so nice to be back because this is such a nice connection and forum. But I have a book coming out in a few months, and it's the lead release from Barnes & Noble, also known as Sterling Publishing, and it's called Creating Your Best Life. And the reason why they've put a lot of oomph behind it is because it will be the first book published on the science of goal setting and the science of happiness and how they intersect. And, you know, I'm really proud of it. I've been working on it steadily for about 9 months. It's one of a kind, and pretty much anyone who wants to accomplish a goal and understand how it configures in with being your best self and also being a little bit happier is going to want to buy the book. I mean, it's a terrific book, and I'd love to talk about any of the aspects about goal setting or happiness or quality of life or anything that you think would be relevant to your audience.
Well, you know what? Let's start with this because I was fascinated. When we reconnected at our reunion, you told me that you had a master's in applied positive psychology, correct?
Okay. Yes.
Which, you know, of course, I had never heard of. So how about if we start there and just tell us about that program and just some basics of positive psychology, and then we can segue into what you actually do
with this education. Okay, that's a great question. You've got so many degrees. You don't need any more. I never had a degree after I left college, and there wasn't anything I really wanted to pursue that fit in with my interests necessarily. And yet, when I saw this smiley face on the cover of Time magazine in early 2005, it was called The New Science of Happiness. And almost the entire issue was devoted to exactly this, the science of well-being, the science of happiness. What do we now know about human flourishing as opposed to, you know, depression and people's weaknesses? And within that issue, there was a mention that the University of Pennsylvania had just started a master's program in applied positive psychology, and they would be accepting their very first class to start that fall. And there was something inside me that just said, you've got to get into that program, because I've been coaching people on high-performance goal setting and how to accomplish the goals that are important to them and live the life they want. So some people would call me a life coach. I call myself a performance coach because this is about high performance in your own life. And I got into the class, and it changed my life. And I now have a master's in the science of happiness. And my capstone project at Penn was exactly what this book is. Just how do you become not just a happier person and enjoy all the benefits that come from being a slightly bit happier, and those benefits are extraordinary, and accomplish your goals at the same time. So that's really become my niche, and that's what this book is about. And it's truly for everyone. Professionally, personally, you could use it in pretty much any domain of your life and benefit from it.
Well, it seems to me that if you reach your goal, that you probably would be happier by default.
It depends on the goal. I mean, that's one of the important things is because goals are not all created equal. The most important goals are the ones that you move towards, that you approach, and that are tied in with your values. So a lot of people will set, for example, New Year's resolutions that may or may not be what's called intrinsic goals, goals that are important to them, goals that they set for themselves and not that other people have set for them. And it's the pursuit of those goals that bring joy. Accomplishment of those goals brings joy as well, but it's the pursuit of these goals that actually makes life somewhat meaningful, and that's important.
Okay, so then we have to start with identifying what the goals are that are most meaningful to you as an individual. So, you know, the person that becomes a physician because their father and grandfather were physicians, but they wanted to be, you know, an astronaut, you know,
right.
They might achieve the goal of becoming an astronaut, but that's not the goal that they really intrinsically had.
Correct.
So you have to be careful about what you ask for.
Well, you have to be careful about what you say is your own personal North Star. What are you hitching to? What star are you trying to connect with? And too often what people do is they adopt goals that their parents or their grandparents or a mentor or society around them tells them is the right goal for them to have without ever stopping and thinking about what do I really want? You know, in my most authentic place, is it do I want to be a handwriting analyst? Do I want to be a mother? Do I want to be a professional? Well, what kind of professional and why? Where are my interests? And beyond that, when am I in a state of flow? When is time standing still while I'm pursuing certain things? And I find that's the question that comes up the most in the people I coach, which is, what do you want? And my experience has been most people don't stop and ask themselves that question. They never really get quiet enough to think through what their values are, not what are their children's values, what their husband's value, what their wife's value, what their parents' value, what's their value, and what is it they want to leave behind as a legacy. And that's when life gets exciting, is when you really start to ponder those questions and come up with a life list, something that is meaningful to you.
So did you say come up with a life list?
A life list, yes. Yeah, so this book is coming out in somewhere around mid-January, and it's being tied in with the time of year when many people make New Year's resolutions. And it is important for people to have a bucket list or a life list or whatever you want to call it, but you must have a roadmap for your own life. Without a roadmap, you're really kind of traveling around but without a destination in sight. And goal-setting theory, which is a big part of the book I wrote, says that goals must be challenging and specific. I mean, you must have challenging, specific, meaningful goals, performance goals, in order to derive the greatest satisfaction and the highest self-esteem from the life you want to lead. Most people don't do that. Most people miss a lot of opportunities to live their best life.
Well, wouldn't you say that, think of, of us, for instance. You know, we went to, pretty good college, I would say, and, self-motivated and, booked for classes and things to educate ourselves. But, when did we ever really encounter the notion of this type of goal setting? I mean, we schedule things, we plan, okay, I'm going to, write this paper or do this or I'm going to get my degree. But this seems, much more detailed and global?
That's a great question, and the answer is most of us are never presented with this kind of information, and that's something I would like to change, is most people are never asked these kinds of questions. What are your goals? How are you going to break them down? Why are these goals important to you? Who's going to help you? What is your social network like? Are the people around you also people who are setting goals and accomplishing them? Because, social contagion theory does predict you become who you spend time with. So all of these questions quite often are not asked. And what we have now, one of the chapters in my book, it concerns this whole group called the New Millennials, which is the current group of, college students and, post-college students who don't tend to be very gritty people. They don't tend to persist very long in task accomplishment because this is the generation that grew up being handed trophies for just setting foot on a soccer field.
Right.
Therefore, what we have is a generation of young adults who are not necessarily accustomed to having grit and hanging in there and setting goals and getting past the first speed bump. So it's very important that we all stop and ask ourselves these questions, but I think for the next generation coming right behind us, it's essential. I mean, it's really essential that we do that and also raise children who are not quitters. So this book is really for all of these groups, and I think also for you and I, because when I got into the work I have now, I got myself a coach, and I didn't need a therapist at that point for any of these questions. What I really needed was some clear direction, purpose, and understanding of how to get from A to B, not necessarily why do I want to go to A to B or what happened in my childhood that would prevent me from going from A to B, but how do I get there and what are the steps? So you have to have measurable, specific steps. So I go into all of that, and it's important that people understand there is a science to making New Year's resolutions that actually work out, or goals that stick. And, you know, it's work that lights your life up. I don't have any other way to say it. It's exciting when you see people start to own what it is they want to do with their life.
Well, yeah, you know, I can certainly see how this would benefit everyone in every aspect of their life. But certainly, you know, for me as a physician, trying to help people accomplish health goals, which are oftentimes difficult, you know, particularly, say, a diabetic person that's obese that really needs to lose 40 pounds. I mean, we've talked about weight being one of the most difficult things to address because of all of the underlying things that can be associated with it and emotions and such. But, you know, this specifically, you know, applies. I mean, I just see this applying to every aspect of my life and every aspect of anyone's life who really wants to get the most out of it. And I want to get back to, though, selecting your goal. I mean, looking, and you have to, from what you've said, get quiet enough and get all of the distractions and all of the, you know, opinions of other people out of the way so that you can sit down and really connect with your true self to figure out what your goals are, and then get the help of someone to help you work on, you know, really crafting those goals. And I'm assuming having some accountability in the steps you take to achieve them.
Yeah, you just said so many important things. I mean, the getting quiet piece is really important, because it's hard to find peace and quiet and time in one's life at times to do this. And I'm always surprised when people tell me that I'm the first person who's ever asked them the question, what do you want, and then listen to the answer. I mean, listening is a gift. So it's important to be able to ask yourself that question, either privately or with someone, and listen to their answer and listen to your own. But then you also have to ask yourself, it's not just what do I want, but why is that goal important to me? And that's when you begin to dig a little bit deeper and find out what that goal actually means to the person. Is it attached to a value of excellence in their life, or honesty, or spiritual growth? I mean, what exactly is it that makes that goal a real goal? And goal, the word goal sometimes makes people freeze. So I've found there are a lot of different ways to go about it. I can ask people who are their favorite role models. What do those people offer that makes them want to be a better person? How could that, you know, become an important driving for them? You can go to some of the internet websites where people are tracking their goals. I have one called your100things.com. There's also www.superviva.com. And if you peruse other people's goals, sometimes you get a clue about what makes your pulse, you know, beat a little bit faster. People have travel goals, and then, you know, sometimes they'll talk to someone who's just kind of forgotten that you can go over, you know, overseas, or, you know, go to Greece or retrace Odysseus's voyage or any of those things. But you remember when you see that someone else has that goal. It's important to surround yourself with people who are doing these kinds of proactive things. It will make you begin to change your goals as well.
So can you repeat the websites again to look at other folks' goals?
Sure. I have one that's very simple, just called www.your100things.com, and that's a social networking site where people connect and cheer each other on and, you know, go after their goals. Another one that's very popular is www.43things.com. Another one is www.superviva.com, which means super life. And it's kind of a sneaky way into your subconscious, is to look at other people's, you know, goal lists and just see, well, what are other people doing? And sometimes just seeing that another adult is learning how to play the piano or pick up an instrument at midlife is enough for someone to say, well, gee, I want to do that too. And when you talk about accountability, that's another important piece that really, you know, bears repeating, because it's not enough to have a goal and to set a goal. You have to follow through with various different things that up your chances and your likelihood of accomplishing that goal. And pre-committing to the goal in some way by joining, for example, a team or paying for something ahead of time, that helps you. But another one is just being accountable to other people or a group. This is where coaching, I think, is particularly valuable, because you're accountable to your coach for your progress on a weekly basis. The greatest athletes among us going to the Olympics, they all have coaches. Why? Not because they're not talented individuals. They need to be pushed to their maximum in order to be their best. So being accountable to a coach or someone else who's influential in your life can make a big difference.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, let me just say this. If there are any folks out there who'd like to call in, please call in to 877-230-3062. That's 877-230-3062. And give us a call and let us hear what you're thinking about all this. Well, we've got a few more minutes before break, and so I'd like to talk about, there was one other website that you sent me to where I needed to do all these questionnaires.
Oh, yes, the Authentic Happiness, www.authentichappiness.org. I think if you do .com, it will redirect you as well. But basically, that is the site put together by Dr. Martin Seligman from the University of Pennsylvania, and Chris Peterson from the University of Michigan. And one of the questionnaires on there is the Signature Strength Test. And if you do that, it's free. You just register with your email address. You can find what your top five strengths are. And people have found that if they know their top five strengths and they use them in the pursuit of their goals, for both professionally and personally, they're happier people. And they actually accomplish their goals more often. It's important to approach life through the prism of what it is that you do naturally and do well. And knowing these strengths and using them has been found to make people happier.
And these are strengths like, give an example.
The ability to love yourself and love others, that's a strength. Another one is wisdom, being able to, you know, look at life with a certain amount of wisdom. Another is creativity, there's curiosity. Death, there's hope and optimism, future-mindedness. These are all strengths that have been culled from a study of cultures throughout time and all over the world. And these 24 strengths, there are 24 of them, and this test will rank your strengths from 1 to 24. These are all, you know, strong things. They're good things. They also have shadow sides. I mean, too much, well, actually, I have to take that back. If you have too much zest or too much love, there isn't necessarily a dark side to it. But there's some strengths that are more correlated with happiness than others. And those include the ability to love others and be loved back. Gratitude. Gratitude is a very important strength. And if that comes up low on your list, you really want to take a look at doing some interventions to raise your gratitude. And one of the ways to do that is very simple, just the three blessings exercise that you can do every night. You know, what three things happened to me today and why did they happen to me? It's a very addictive, simple little exercise you can do.
Well, let's hang on the point on gratitude for a minute, because it has come up many times the past year in readings and things that I've done, and how important it is to have a grateful heart in attracting the things that you want in your life. And I think just in being a happier person, I think sometimes what happens is we get caught up in the stuff in our life and we forget all of the wonderful things that we have. And we get, you know, down and we get dark. And if we just stop and say, gosh, you know, I've got my health, I've got my family that loves me. It's a beautiful day today. I mean, sometimes I find myself, just being, something happened, started the day off, and you have that feeling that, oh, the rest of the day is just going to be terrible. But I can break that just by, saying, oh, my God, it's a beautiful day.
Right.
And boy, am I thankful for the day. And it's amazing how that simple little shift makes me just feel so much better, and the rest of my day can be fine.
Well, isn't it interesting how a simple shift in how you look at life can make you happier? Because that is exactly what happens. And then, just to connect it to the accomplishment of your goals, when people are happier, they actually pursue their goals with more energy and zest, and they think differently. They have what's called pathways thinking. So just to go back to the whole thing about, well, why is happiness and goal accomplishment connected? Well, for this very reason. You can intervene on yourself with something simple like, what am I grateful for? Oh, my gosh, I'm grateful that I've got these wonderful friends around me who really believe in the work I'm doing, and they tell me often how meaningful I am to them. I'm grateful my children are healthy. I'm grateful that I love my job. And then when you begin to think about those things and note them at night, the most interesting thing happens. You begin to notice more things to be grateful for during the day. Now, so you begin to develop this attitude of gratitude, which then spills over and makes the rest of your life better. Your health improves. You even, make a higher salary. You have more friends. Your relationships are more rewarding. I mean, getting just a little bit happier, going over that tipping point, even by a little bit, has all of this really important outcome on the other side that impacts every aspect of your life, not just goal accomplishment, but it does affect goal accomplishment. And unhappy people, interestingly enough, don't notice those little things to be grateful for. You can hold a door for an unhappy person, and they will go and survey them, and they will find that the unhappy person did not even notice that something nice was done for them.
But, I can certainly relate to that. There have certainly been times when I've been more down. I'm not going to say necessarily depressed, but, all sorts of things have just gone by. And people come to me later and say, well, I asked you if you wanted to do X, Y, Z, and I don't even remember it. It's like it went in one ear and out the other. And it just affects my whole ability to see opportunities that have gone by. When I had my regular medical practice, I probably was depressed at that time and exhausted. And I look back and I'm talking to people, and there are opportunities that I would have embraced that came by, but you never even gave them the time of day.
Right.
And so I can see how, just in my own life, how my mental attitude affected just my ability to see good things that were coming by. And I certainly didn't have any way of at that time making myself feel happy. I wasn't grateful for anything. I was a miserable person trapped in a miserable situation with a conventional, very busy managed care medical practice. But that brings us to a good time to take a break. And so let's take a break for a minute, and let's hope we get some calls. Sorry about that phone call in the background, and we'll be back shortly.
Dr. Doreen Virtue, and you're listening to Contact Talk Radio.
Invest in your past, your future, and your life with a cellular cleansing with this world-renowned medical intuitive. Patty Conklin not only has the ability to see the words that have created illnesses and emotional imbalances in your life, but she is a master vibrational manipulator. She can assist you with neutralizing the memories of the events in your life using her own signature energy and this groundbreaking process. Remember, your body has made a complete recording of every single word and emotion which you have experienced in your life and has stored those words using your immune system, storing them in the actual cells throughout your body. Cellular cleansing is utilized to assist you in taking the emotional charge out of the negative events in your life. This intense process is done over a day and a half period, in person only. Come visit Patty in Atlanta, or she can fly to where you are. Go to www.pattyconklin.com today and read about cellular cleansing and feel if it's right for you. Or call 888-376-3301. That's 888-376-3301. Invest in your future today.
This is ContactTalkRadio.com. Consciousness in action.
Be part of the show. Call now at ContactTalkRadio.com at 1-877-230-3062.
Okay, folks, we're back. We have our special guest, Caroline Miller, and tonight we are talking about happiness and goal setting and the impact of happiness on goal setting, and also just the whole notion of living a fuller, more powerful life and how it relates to these things. Now, at the break, we were talking about different important factors in getting to your goal. Can you touch on that again?
Sure. I've broken the book. It's called Creating Your Best Life. It's coming out in January. I've broken the book into a number of important chapters that involve the muscles, so to speak, that you must have in order to set and accomplish goals. Because as we said in the first part, not all goals are created equal. You can't just accomplish a goal by setting it or having the intention to accomplish the goal. That's an important first step, but you have to add in things like accountability and pre-commitment. Now, some of the most important things, though, that are traditionally hard for a lot of people, but particularly in the United States, this is one of the lowest character strengths. This is one of the 24 strengths. But it's one of the lowest ones for most people is self-regulation. Self-regulation and modesty tend to be two of the lesser strengths of many people in our country and other countries. But self-regulation is also just willpower, self-control, the ability to say no to yourself, the ability to put off rewarding yourself so that you can accomplish something short-term that is hard. And many people have self-regulation challenges, and they have them in a variety of areas, you know, eating or drinking or overspending. I mean, we're a nation of credit card abusers. And
right.
So one of the things that's been found is that we only have so much self-control on a daily basis, and once it's used up, it's gone. And that's research out of Florida State University by a brilliant man named Roy Baumeister. And there's many, many studies that he's done with other colleagues, but he's in on a lot of these. And one of the things they've found is that when we wake up in the morning, our self-control is like a muscle, but it does get depleted throughout the day. The more we use it to either restrain our anger or hold our tongue or try not to eat something that's tempting because it's sitting, you know, the candy dish is right on our desk, or we're trying to avoid over-drinking or saying the wrong thing or whatever it is, the more you call upon that limited resource, the more you use it up. And once it's gone for the day, you tend to make more blunders, which is why you don't want to set too many self-control goals at once. That's one of the prime reasons why New Year's resolutions fail. People set too many self-regulation goals, like quit smoking, quit drinking, lose 20 pounds. You can't do all of those things at once. So scientifically, it's important to only set maybe one self-regulation goal at a time. And if you're not good at saying no to yourself, then there's several different things you can do. And one of the interesting studies that there are a couple of them out of Australia show that if you pursue a program of money management for about 2 months, you have a spillover effect in terms of being able to self-regulate in other areas, such as cigarette consumption, caffeine consumption, exercising longer and more persistently. Same thing is true if you start a two-month program of lifting weights and doing aerobic exercise. What they find is those people also manage money more effectively and also have fewer self-regulation challenges. So if you pick one area, one important area, to use more willpower in, you will find you have more of it in other areas as well. another important finding that
came
out.
Well, before you go on, let me just give you an example. You know, I know for a fact that when I exercise, I make better choices when I'm eating.
That's
absolutely,
why.
Hands down. I mean, mm-hmm. I know the key to for my wellness is exercise, because it definitely has a spillover effect, and I imagine that that would be true for many people.
It is absolutely true, and I think it's true for another reason as well. Another piece of the puzzle here is just having mastery experiences, having a feeling of self-efficacy and the ability to actually do something. And if you have a mastery experience like physical exercise in the morning, you feel more potent as a human being for the rest of the day. And if you study high achievers, interestingly enough, the vast majority of them are morning exercisers. They start the day with a mastery experience. But when you tie in the self-regulation research, what is so interesting to me is that lifting weights or going to a spinning class or going to Pilates or yoga or whatever it is will also help you manage your money better. It will also help you in all kinds of other areas. So because self-regulation is the critical muscle in terms of accomplishing a goal, because without willpower, there are no goals you can accomplish. You absolutely have to set about strengthening this muscle and avoiding situations where you are unnecessarily depleting your self-regulation if you've got another big goal to attend to later that day. And one of the things Roy Baumeister told me, I have a very interesting podcast, short podcast interview with him on my website, which I should probably say is just carolinemiller.com, www.carolinemiller.com. I have 15-minute podcast interviews with all the leaders in the positive psychology field just to give people bite-sized looks at what's important, what's cutting edge in the field of happiness and goal accomplishment. One of the things Roy Baumeister said is that one substance has been found to undercut all goal accomplishment. You want to take a guess what it is?
Poor sleep?
No, but close. No, it's alcohol. Alcohol has been found to undermine all goal accomplishment, regardless of what the goal is.
Wow.
And the reason he talks about that is because just imagine when you drink, or even drink a little bit, not even just excessively, you lose your judgment about things like holding your tongue, so your anger, your judgment around social situations. You lose the ability to control your eating, your drinking, your anger, you know, pretty much everything.
Yeah, all sorts of behaviors come out when people drink, and particularly when they drink excessively.
So, you know, for many people who are striving to accomplish goals, I really ask them to take a look at where alcohol fits into their lives, because it also cuts into just the ability to get up in the morning with a clear head, and that will cut into your ability to go make your workouts in the morning, which is your mastery experience and your ability to manage money better. So, you know, it's really important that people take a look at self-regulation. Now, Ben Franklin figured this out, you know, a couple hundred years ago. He embarked upon a character improvement program in his 70s, where he tried to just be a better person. And he has this notebook that I think still exists today, where people can see he lined up all the virtues that he wanted to have in life, things like temperance and modesty and humility and, you know, not getting into sloth. And he picked one of them. He figured this out. He knew you couldn't do them all at once. He picked one of them. And he would put a check mark at the end of the day if he managed to get through the day and exercise that virtue. And he would not move on to trying to master another virtue until he had at least 2 weeks of check marks next to one of them. And that is the basis of the Franklin Covey system. It works.
So you pick a virtue and you work on that particular virtue for a few weeks until you have mastered your ability to control it.
Yes, and that's just an exercise in strengthening your willpower. You're using your conscious control to be a better person. So, if, for example, if you're used to speeding on the highway all the time, you're not a good driver. If you just pick that one thing, like giving up something for Lent, and you use your conscious willpower to not give in to some kind of temptation, you would find that you would then have the ability to move into another area and self-regulate better. And that's exactly what Ben Franklin did.
That's excellent. I mean, these are all things that we can just do. It doesn't take, you know, something special. We can just wake up tomorrow morning and say, you know, I'm not going to speed on the highway. which, you know, in Atlanta would be a blessing if everyone would take that one to heart. Now, let's move on to the second issue you said was so important for people to develop, or the third one, rather. I think it was grit.
Grit. I love grit. Grit is one of the tests you can take at that website that we were talking about at AuthenticHappiness.com. And it's just the grit scale. I think it's about 25 questions, and it gives you a score. And grit is now being defined as the ability to pursue goals over the long term despite short-term challenges. And Angela Duckworth and Marty Seligman have studied this at the University of Pennsylvania. It's become Angela Duckworth's signature work. And it is now the grit scale score is the leading predictor of who drops out at West Point during that first summer, as well as who finals in the National Spelling Bee. So the quality of grit is one of the qualities you see in people who accomplish their goals, high grit scores, because these are people who do not quit. And that's what I was referring to a little bit earlier in the challenge of the new millennials, you know, the new group of, you know, post-college students who aren't used to, for example, mowing lawns during the summer. They're used to having a gap year and going to Europe and, you know, backpacking or whatever. But people are not necessarily accustomed to setting goals and sticking with them through thick and thin. Some athletes are brought up to do this better than others. If you have an athletic background, I tend to find that you really get the concept of grit much more quickly. Or a musician, even, someone who's really stuck with an instrument, you know, during all the boring years of scales and arpeggios and fifths and thirds and
right.
Even diminished sevenths.
Yeah.
You know, anyone who is really stuck with something over the long haul, that's someone who's going to accomplish their goals. Because face it, it's not always a straight line from I want to do this to goal accomplishment.
Right. So, well, you know, that brings up a point that I think is related and important and maybe impact in the future. In, or at least in Georgia, you know, they have now taken sports or phys ed and music and art out of school. There
oh, wow.
are elementary schools I know where they have a gym teacher that comes once a week and the kids get to do gym that day. And then the next day, somebody may come and do some art, but as far as having musical instruments available, it's gone. Now, when I was in elementary school, this was in New York City in the, well, whenever that was, I played in the orchestra when I was in fourth grade. You know, so I was learning, I learned how to play the viola. And it was in school, and of course I would never have had access to a viola at home, and most of the kids in my school wouldn't have access to any kind of instrument at home.
Right.
Yet we had this opportunity to learn how to play, and you had to practice, and we got to take the instruments home with us to practice. And we also had gym class, and we got to learn a particular activity, and we got to compete against each other. You know, we had the, I remember distinctly winning the football throwing contest. You had to throw the football through, I think, a tire that was hung across
you
the room.
You won that?
And I won that, boys and girls and everybody.
Oh,
and I was able to get it through the hole from the furthest distance.
Wow.
Now, think about this whole, these kids now that never get that. They never have an opportunity to even try. Much less
right.
stick with it to see how they can improve and accomplish that goal. And then I think you mentioned earlier about how, you know, there's this philosophy that kids, they should all get a trophy because they showed up.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because I've had, as you know, I have this mobile medical practice. And periodically a doctor will call and say, gosh, I love this idea. You know, I'd like to consider doing this with you. How does this work? And I'd explain how I did it and whatever, whatever. And then they said, well, you know, I'm very interested in joining you. How many patients can you guarantee me a day?
Oh.
And it's like, you know, And then when I say, no, you have to, you know, go out and get your own client, then I'll help you, then they disappear.
Right.
And it's like, oh, you love how this works, but to actually have to
work,
exercise a little grit to make it happen, you know, and they go running the other way.
Oh, yeah. That's so common.
Yeah, and they were all of the people that I'm talking about were at least 10 years younger than me.
Wow.
And so that's an interesting point that you bring up, and then I, you know, connecting it to this particular experience, you know, I wonder, I mean, obviously they were able, they had some grit, they got through medical school, you know, but, you know, you do have, I mean, there are other things that help motivate you through school. Otherwise,
right.
they would have quit already, but, you know, it was just striking to me that it was this mindset of having it handed to them as opposed
exactly.
to working at it.
And you see a lot of that in life, unfortunately. And that, you know, quite often those are people who react more than they're proactive, or perhaps they just aren't even thinking outside the box about, you know, how could I make these things happen? It's always about what can be given to me. And out-of-the-box thinking is really important if you want to be happy and accomplish your goals. Is you have to always be thinking creatively and surrounding yourself with, you know, this other important point of accomplishing your goals is, you know, social contagion. And, you know, this wonderful doctor at Harvard Medical School, Nick Christakis, is now coming out with, you know, study after study showing that when we accomplish goals like quitting smoking or losing weight, we do it in clusters and we do it in a socially contagious way. So you have to, you know, be around the people who elicit the best from you, not a bunch of mediocre people who want things given to them or who don't strive for things that matter to them. So social contagion is a predictor of goal accomplishment as well. I ask everyone to fill out a web of influence. Who's in their life? Who's important? Because believe me, when you look at those names and you look at the qualities attached to those people, that's who you are. That's who you are as well. But I want to go back to also to the whole idea of you know, competition in elementary school and how you loved, you know, learning the viola and then throwing the football through a tire, which I'm not surprised you could do it, but I think it's pretty cool, actually. But in the elementary schools my kids have been in, they stripped out all the competition. They took out the fun run. They took out pretty much everything because they don't want anyone to feel like a loser. So
wow.
There's this bizarre, you know, in Alice in Wonderland, all must win and all must have prizes.
Yeah, but what world is that? I mean, that's not the world that we live in. And
right.
So, you know, what happens when you get out of school?
Well, you develop a bunch of sociopaths, is what they found, is that sociopaths and narcissists who think that they are wonderful people simply because they are. They are, they exist.
And therefore they deserve everything.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's a sense of entitlement. And so, you know, from what I've been reading and doing this research, is that even the Girl Scouts have gone back on this whole idea of self-esteem comes through affirmations or just saying, I'm great because I am, and looking in the mirror and just saying it very earnestly to yourself, or rewarding yourself not for hard work. And this is also what Carol Dweck has found at Stanford University in terms of a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset. If you praise a child for hard work as opposed to just kind of an innate trait like intelligence, you will develop a more flexible, resilient human being as opposed to someone who's just praised for, I don't know, looks or intelligence or whatever, a fixed trait. You can't praise someone for a fixed trait because that's not necessarily something they've worked hard at.
Right.
So it's important, yeah, it's important that we recognize and celebrate hard work. And Jessica Tracy at the University of British Columbia, that's another podcast interview on my site, she's found that authentic self-esteem only develops through doing things that are hard, hard goals outside your comfort zone. That is how you develop self-esteem. That is how you change your perception of yourself and say, I am a hard worker. I am a doer. I do get things done. You know, and I would mention that both of us, you know, in getting to where we are in professions that we love, have gone outside our comfort zone and taken risks. I mean,
oh,
you have to take risks.
Definitely. And, you know, sometimes you fail. You
oh,
know,
yeah,
sometimes
fail.
You fail. And you know what? Let's take another break. Time is flying by. Let's take another break, and let's come back and talk about failure, because I think that's an important point fake, and we can tie that into our commencement speaker who spoke of it so wonderfully. So let's take a break, and we'll be back in a minute.
Great.
Friends, now is the time to improve your health and your relationships and your mental well-being. Experience a half-hour session or a cellular cleansing with Patty, gaining insights into the memories and emotions you have stored in your body, creating illness or emotional imbalance. Patty will guide you through her world-famous Colorworks process, giving you the tools to change your life. Go to www.pattyconklin.com or phone 888-376-3301 today for your life-changing appointment.
Hi, this is Greg Braden, and you're listening to Contact Talk Radio.
Patty's world-famous Colorworks CD and Healing Within audiobook is available today at www.pattyconklin.com. If you need to have a better understanding of how your words affect your body, then the Healing Within audiobook is a perfect choice for you. This intense, humorous 4-CD set is 3 solid hours of discussion on how your words create illness, your cellular memory, and most importantly, what to do about it, homework included. Rebuilding the immune system is also available. If you find yourself needing an immune boost, this is the CD for you. Go to www.pattyconklin.com today.
Be part of the show. Call now at contacttalkradio.com at 1-877-230-3062.
Okay, and we're back. And I believe that we left off. I brought up the topic of failure, and we were chatting about that a little bit. And at least from my perspective, failure has helped me through the years. Just knowing that you can recover from it, I think, is a wonderful accomplishment. So, how does that fit into this topic for you?
Well, okay. Where it fits in, this is the chapter 18, the speed bump chapter in my book. Is, you know, we all fail, and it's important that we fail, because if we don't fail, it means we haven't taken any risks. It's how resilient are you, and how can you re-engage in life with a current set of goals that reflect what you learned from that failure? Because the people who succeed the most in life also tend to have the most failures, and that's exactly what you see in baseball. You know, the people with the highest strikeouts also tend to be the people who have the most home runs. So you have to really put yourself out there in order to get home runs in life. But how do you tell yourself the script of what happened? Really meaningful. Because people who simply take failure and go and lick their wounds and go hide for the rest of their lives really haven't learned much. But the people who actually have resilience are the ones who are able to reach out, connect with other people, because relationships are a huge piece of happiness. The happiest people have at least 4 friends. So you connect with the people who are meaningful to you, you learn whatever you need to learn from this failure, and what you find is that people then create a leveraged set of goals that actually couldn't have happened without the failure as part of them. And, you know, I know you and I have both failed big time and spectacularly
yeah.
at times, and yet I would venture a guess that neither one of us would be where we are today without those failures under our belt.
Absolutely. I mean, I learned a lot from the failure we were talking about on break, you know, and so the experience of it was so valuable to me, and it really helped me through a difficult time to have something else to focus on trying to accomplish, and the lessons that I learned from it and from the experience was a holistic kind of health center, and I got exposed to Reiki and hypnosis and herbal medicine and certain types of massage and all these different complementary methods to care for people, and it really expanded my knowledge and acceptance of alternative approaches to healing. and how valuable they were and how effective they were. And so it was a stepping stone, albeit a very expensive stepping stone, to where I am today. So, you know, looking back on it, it was very valuable. Did I lose a lot of money? Yes. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a better person from it. And I think also I learned that I don't have to be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
I
failed, but you know what? People still love me, and I was able to, you know, get back on the horse, you know, and try something new. You know, and so here I am with a house call practice that, you know, there are very few of them in this, in the country.
Right.
So, you know, the failure certainly did help. I think the key point is, you know, like you said, is what do you do after the failure?
Right. And what kind of doors does it open for you? You have to stop. And remember, we were talking a little bit earlier about grateful people and happy people.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of looking at things in a pessimistic, cynical, you know, down way, it's important that we look at them in a grateful way and say, what are the good things that emerged as a result of this? Because that is what happy people do. I mean, not to use a cliche, but it's true. I mean, they make lemonade out of the lemon. And that's what allows them to then be persistent, flexible, and pursuit of other goals. So
Right. It's
what you do with it and how you learn from it, how you grow from it. But one of the things that I said on break was, you know, what they found is that short-term, people regret the things that they risk and don't work out. But there's a tipping point. Somewhere between the third and seventh year, people regret more the things that they did not pursue, so, you know, the risks they did not take. So if you want to have a well-lived, happy life, it's important to always be willing to take risks where, you know, things can happen, where you might lose some money or you might lose a friend or you might lose something. But, push the envelope. And there's a whole new breed of consultants who cater to CEOs and executives around teaching them how to go past their freak-out point. Mm-hmm. And they do this by taking them out on, you know, really challenging, you know, black diamond ski. I'm not a skier, so I don't really know. But teaching someone to go outside their freak-out point and then to come back, because that generates more optimism, more of a sense of mastery, and a greater sense of self-control when you learn how to do that and come back. If you never take a risk, you never have that ability. And what they say is it translates into being better, a better executive and a better person. So you must find ways to take risks.
You know, it's interesting to pass the freak-out point. I learned how to dive, scuba dive, about 8 years ago or so. And I've been afraid of the water. I think Jaws did it for me, and I've just kind of had this underlying fear of the water. I get in, I splash around, and I get out. And I decided that my partner talked me into it, and I said, okay, I'm going to go do this. And I managed to get certified to dive and all that. But to this day, when I dive, the first 10 feet down, going down, is total freak-out time.
Really?
To the point of resurfacing two or three times before being able to make myself go all the way down. And once I'm down and I'm looking at the fish and plants and whatever, I relax and I'm preoccupied and I'm fine. But the first 10 feet, I wig out. Every time.
Really?
Really.
And then do you enjoy it? Do you get into a state of flow once you're down there?
I love it. Once I get down there, I'm so fascinated. I mean, I'm in another world. It's beautiful, and it's quiet, and you just feel like, you know, so insignificant, you know, really. And it's an amazing experience, and I keep saying to myself, my God, I'm breathing underwater.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I'm like, wow, this is so cool. But the first 10 feet, it's nerve-wracking. And then as I work my way down, you know, instead of panting and breathing, you know, so fast, I get down to the bottom, and then I start breathing slowly, then I start paying attention to what's around me, and and then I'm thrilled. But it just made me, you know, what you're talking about, you know, getting past that point can be so rewarding. And the example of diving, I think, is a great example. At least for me, it is so rewarding and so wonderful to get, you know, 20 or 40 or 60 feet down and to be able to just swim along gently and observe this other world. So, you know, maybe diving is the answer for some folks. Make yourself do it.
You know, 8 years ago, I went and got myself certified, too, or maybe it was 10 years ago, to be for exactly the same reason. I was a competitive swimmer, for God's sake, but I think Jaws did me in, too. There must be something about our age.
Yes.
And the year of that movie, it was like 76 or something. That's a pretty formative age for us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I encourage everyone to pick a scary goal every single year, and that was my scary goal, was getting certified as a diver, so I know exactly what you're saying, and I know all of the payoffs that you're talking about, because it's real. A lot of people pick scuba diving for that very reason, because the minute that regulator's in your mouth and someone says, take a breath underwater, it's like, oh, my God, are you kidding me?
Exactly.
And yet you come up literally rebirth.
Yes, every time.
So that's a really good point.
Well, so we'll have to go diving sometime.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Caroline, we're down to 2 minutes. We are down to 2 minutes. And I cannot believe it. It flies by every time. This has been a fantastic episode. We're down to 1 minute. So you can reach Caroline at carolinemiller.com. You can reach me at mobile-medicine.net. And Caroline, we need to have you back on the show.
Great. I'll come back when the book's out.
Okay, well, fantastic. Everybody have a good evening. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next week.